Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at how you and I might stay injury-free during spring sports and that early season gardening. Two guests for you, Bill Boisenault, associate professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and also senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinic. Bill, great to see you again.
Good to be back, Larry. Thank you.
Lori Tyne Brody as well, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah. And Lori, great to see you again.
It is good to be back on such a beautiful day.
Balmy, yeah. March.
Balmy, indeed. And it is technically still winter, which I just love that.
Yeah, we could be talking about heat injury and heat stroke in April, the way this is going.
Exactly, exactly.
Wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody complain.
No.
You know, I mean, I do feel badly for the skiers and snowshoers and snowmobilers, et cetera. But, you know, I'm not part of that group at the moment. So selfishly, this has been, it's been a nice
year. Well, you know, last week I took all the kids to Tyrol Basin for a last hurrah on that. I think it was in the 60s that day. And,
wow.
Oh, they had a great time. The snow was nice. The snow was still nice. And it was sunny and warm. And it was beautiful.
Great,
it was the quintessential spring skiing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here we are with potential whole string of injuries, I suppose, we get
come up with
at this time of year.
When we come out of hibernation.
Exactly, exactly. And we came out so fast, there was no breaking into it where you went for a run one day and then it got cold. And so, you had 4 or 5 days before you went again. Now people are out hitting it hard every day. I see the bikers are all out.
They're out again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, one of the things to be careful of out on the roads is the gravel. You know, they put down all that sand and gravel in the winter, and the roads haven't been cleaned yet. So when you're making those corners or coming to a fast stop, you need to be really careful, whether you're on foot or on your bike.
Yeah, that's right. It's not just the bike. The people on bikes need to be aware of that, because there's a lot of that on the roads and sidewalks.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Well, John in La Crosse has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, this has been going on for a few years now that my left and right hips really seem to pain me a lot, and I see a chiropractor regularly, and he calls it locked up. Well, that's about as good as he can do for me, and it's still, I'm a trucker. I drive, and I try to use the cruise control as much as I can because pushing on the accelerator is a lot of pain, like right at the belt loops on the left and right.
Okay. So right at the hips.
Mm-hmm. And, John, was there an injury that started this off?
No injury whatsoever. Just over time, I guess I'm 49. It's just something that's happened over time. And my chiropractor, he said, well, it's just there's not enough mobility in my hips. It's just locked up. And they're really, as we speak right now, it's just like a pain right at the right and left-hand belt loop, if you will.
Okay. All right. Does the pain extend down into your legs, thighs, knees, feet?
Well, it kind of does, maybe not as far as the feet, but sometimes it's worse than others. You know, maybe a scale of, my chiropractor asked me, too, what's the scale of pain, 0 to 10, and sometimes it's an 8, or whatever.
Okay. Any numbness or tingling in the legs or feet?
No, but it seems like it's almost like right at the hip point on the right and left. It's almost a little bit of a burning sensation.
Okay.
A little bit, but not all the time either. But it's just really something that I'd really like to get a handle on.
Right. Well, hip joints are not an uncommon area for pain to start. That's a common place for osteoarthritis. You can have bursitis in that area. But when it's both hips, for this long, especially at your age and without a significant injury, I question whether it might be coming from your back. The low back area can cause pain referral into the hip region, and the fact that it goes down into your legs, this could be back-related. It sounds like you've given the chiropractic care a good run, and so, if you're looking for a second opinion, to have somebody who can examine your hips and examine that low lumbar area and see if they can figure out exactly where the source of the symptoms are. And the fact that you're a truck driver and you have problems with sitting, and 8 to 10 is pretty intense, I think maybe another evaluation could be helpful for you.
Yeah, you're awfully young to have that much pain and mobility loss in your hips. So certainly spend a lot of your day sitting, but that can be counteracted with some exercises. And it may be that it's just the accumulated posture of being in that position for so long and a few exercises, once you have clarification on what exactly the underlying problem is, can help increase your mobility and decrease your pain.
Yeah.
Like a physical therapist is a referral, you mean, or what professional do I see next?
Well, a physical therapist can certainly examine you, and you can call a local clinic. You may or may not need a physician referral. If you have not seen a physician for a physical examination in the last couple of years, I guess that's where I would probably go and have a head-to-toe physical examination and describe the symptoms that you're having. Then they could potentially help guide you in terms of what imaging you might need or sending you to a physical therapist or whomever to continue on with the care.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kathy and Madison, it's your turn. Thank you for
good.
Calling.
I'm so happy to be that you guys were on. I am 64. I love to bike and walk. In fact, I just did a 5-mile walk this morning. When I bike around the lake, I do Lake Minota once a week. I did that last week, and I had a tightness on the outer portion of my right knee. And it started about halfway through the bike ride. I got off the bike. I walked for 5 minutes. I had no pain. It all went away. I got back on the bike, started right up again. And the last half of the bike ride, I had to keep stopping, walking, biking, and I never really could get that issue to go away. Do you know what that might be?
Do you have clip-ins?
No, I don't.
Okay. You have cages?
No.
Just and you have a regular, you have a hybrid, you have a mountain bike?
I have a regular bike. It does have the cushion, the shock, absorber stuff on that, but nothing
okay.
special on the pedals or
okay.
anything like that.
All right. And you rode this bike last year and had no problems?
Well, I did have some issues with that last year, but it was so unexpected that it hit me this year, and I did have some issues last year. Not as severe, I don't think.
Okay. Well, it makes me wonder if there's something about the fit of your bike.
Okay.
That's not working for you, and then just being untrained and unconditioned and unused to being on your bike, it just showed up right away.
Okay.
So I'd probably start with a trip to the bike shop to have them check your fit and see how it is. And if they say, gosh, everything looks great to me, then you may want to think about going into the health system and have them take a look at you. There are people at UW at the Sports Medicine Center who mm-hmm. specialize in bike fitting,
okay.
particularly for people who are having symptoms anywhere, whether it's a hip, a knee, a back, or whatever. So they can also look at you on your bike and check your fit. Then they can also examine you to see if there's any weakness or imbalance or asymmetry side to side that may cause that. I asked about your clip-ins because sometimes when your feet are fixed on the bike and they're fixed in the wrong position, that can be a big problem. One of the nice things about not being fixed is that you can adjust your position sometimes to accommodate that pain.
Okay.
I'm presuming you tried to move your foot around on your pedal to change the pain.
I tried all kinds of things.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
I was straightening my leg out.
What about the seat?
I don't know.
Right. Sometimes it's a seat height issue.
Mm-hmm.
If the seat is, more often it's too low than too high. So that can be an issue too, but get it taken care of sooner rather than later and see how far you get. I'd start with the simple, like I said, the bike shop, and then if that's not have a favorable outcome for you, then I go into the health system and go that direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks so much.
Yep.
Thanks, Kathy, for calling. Appreciate your call. Wondering what kind of motions in spring sports, we're just talking about her pedaling now got me thinking about other kinds of motions that we might have in sports that could lead to injuries.
Well, in running, you have the repetitive pounding. I'm guessing probably a lot of the diehard runners ran all winter because the weather was pretty good. So they may be pretty well conditioned for the spring. So it's usually the pounding issues, and then it's the spring sports, such as golf, where you have a lot of trunk and hip rotation.
Yeah,
so for people who have a little bit of arthritis or some problems with their back, all that rotation with that long lever arm at the end of your arm, and then you have this long club swinging out at the end of it, creates a lot of torque on your spine. So you have that, and then you have the bikers with repetitive knee flexion and extension, which tends to stir up knee joints. And then you have the sports such as soccer, where you have start, stop, you have people tearing their ACLs.
Yeah, for a lot of the sports, the repetition that gets people into trouble.
Yeah.
So with our last caller, if you're going to do lots of biking, you want a bike that fits you well. If you're doing lots of walking and running, you want shoes that fit your feet and ankle mechanics really well.
And shoes, I don't think, and I'm probably guilty of this too, we don't probably change our tennis shoes or running shoes maybe as often as we should.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of research now on the barefoot running versus shod running thing. And if you're going to run with a shoe on, if you're going to run in a shod, using those mechanics, then you need to replace your shoes because your gait pattern is based upon the presumption that your shoes are going to absorb shock. Mm-hmm. And if they're worn out and they don't, then you get in trouble.
Yeah. Rich in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Hi there. I had an MRI done, and they told me I have tendinosis in the tendon hamstring to the sit bone. And I went to a physical therapist, and he's given me eccentric exercises to do. And from my understanding, it's a long-term recovery. And wondering if you could talk about tendinosis, what it is, and talk about what are the options to recovery from it.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're on the right track. So tendinosis is a degeneration of your tendon. So just like joints degenerate over time, so do tendons. And we used to call everything tendinitis. And then, oh gosh, it's been a long time now. About probably 35 years ago, Dr. Nerschel was looking at the tendinitis at the elbow and said, there's no sign of inflammation here. This is more of a degenerative condition. And in the subsequent time, it's been studied pretty extensively. And where they're at now is the belief that the eccentrics, that is the lengthening contraction, better contributes to the healing of the tendon than the shortening contractions. There's a long history of doing shortening contractions and people didn't get better. There's a pretty strong biologic basis for the eccentric contractions and why they work in degenerative tendons. So that's really the current operating theory. That's fairly well substantiated. And it is. It takes a while, but really it's heavy lifting. In the past we said, no pain, no gain, but in this particular case of this kind of tendinosis, you do have to have a little bit of pain with your eccentrics. And it's been shown that helps it to heal.
Lori, tied to this, besides the eccentric exercise, injections? Is there a role for injections?
Yeah, prolotherapy. That's the injections. They inject different materials. In this case, usually the autologous blood mixture. So they take your own blood and they re-inject it into the tendon to facilitate the healing process. This tendon's pretty deep to do that. Yeah. They do it quite a bit in the they'll do it in the Achilles, they'll do it in the patellar tendon. This tendon's pretty deep down in your sit bone, so I haven't read much about people doing that kind of injection in this tendon.
Yeah. Back in the days when it was an itis, they would do a fair number of steroid injections into the area with mixed results.
Yeah.
Now they know it's a different animal from a pathophysiological standpoint. There are different types of injections that may be tried.
Rich, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about staying injury-free this time of year with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network as we talk about staying injury-free with our two guests from the UW, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Bob in Wauwatosa is next with a question, so let's go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I am one of those dedicated runners that you were talking about earlier that I ran outside all winter and run a lot of miles and pretty long distances, and recently have didn't really have any identifiable injury moment, but I've been starting to experience some pain in what I believe is called the metatarsal arch area, the top of my foot, kind of behind the big toe, and it's not doesn't cause me to change my gait. It doesn't cause me acute pain while running. It's more of an ache, and then when I'm finished, I can get kind of a sharper pain if I twist my foot towards the inside. And I'm wondering what might be happening there. And as long as you tell me that I can continue running, I'll be completely happy.
Well, we'll start by saying that you can continue running. Is it around your big toe? Is it just your big toe? Or is it across that whole arch?
I would say it's probably pinpointed more behind the toe, but if you went from the underside of the foot, you know, from the arch, but it's on the top of the foot. I don't know if I'm describing that right.
But. So it's on the top of your foot. Is it at the your big toe though, or is it your second, third, fourth, and fifth toes?
No, it's more on the inside side of my foot. More on the, you know, on the behind the big toe, but on the top of the foot.
So, Bob, is it at the toe joint, or is it more in the middle of the foot?
No, it's in the middle of the foot.
Okay. Way to go, Bill. Well, things that go wrong there, I mean, stress fractures is one, and the other thing is neuromas that happen in there, so you could have a little neuroma between those two toes. The question is, what... is it the twisting motion or is it the squeezing motion that causes the pain? If you just squeeze the ball of your foot together, does that hurt?
No, it's more of the twisting motion. If I take my bare foot and kind of wring it out, if you will, that's what produces the pain.
Okay. And is there any particular pinpoint spot if you went and you poked around? Can you find a spot that hurts?
Not if I'm palpating it, really. I mean, just it's more of that twisting. It's not, there's not like a, you know, push with my finger and there's the pain.
Okay. Well, you know, the most common things in that area would be some metatarsal arch issues where you could try a metatarsal pad to see if giving a little more support to your metatarsal heads feels better. It's not sounding neuroma-ish. Usually if you squeeze between the toes, okay, you will find a spot that really hurts. So that would be a sign of a neuroma. You can have some arthritis in your big toe joint that's kind of referred across there, but that would be tender right over your big toe joint. So then the other culprit would be a potential metatarsal stress fracture that causes pain when you torque on the bones with that rotational aspect. So that would be another thing. So the easy thing is to start with a metatarsal pad and see how far that gets you. Okay. And if you're still having the pain, go in and have it looked at for a more definitive diagnosis.
Okay. And where do you get a metatarsal pad?
You can get it at a drugstore.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that just goes on the bottom of your foot?
It goes on the bottom of your foot, yeah. Okay. So you think about an arch support for your long arch. It's just an arch support that goes perpendicular to that.
Okay.
All right.
Great, thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Sandy in Minocqua, we're on to you now. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I'm a daily listener to your show.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call, and I've been waiting for you to have Bill and Lori on. My question is, for the past 6 months, I've had some pretty severe back pain. I had an MRI, and the MRI showed that at L5, S1, I had spondylolisthesis, and there was some talk about doing some surgery on this. And also, I have at L4-5 a synovial cyst. Now, I have two questions first of all, I at this time I'm having no pain. I'm being careful not to do heavy lifting. I am a very active person. I exercise every day. I did stop doing yoga a few months ago because I found that very painful. Well, since I'm not having any pain right now, is it okay to just leave it alone and just be careful about heavy lifting and excessive exercise? And if that's all right, are there any particular activities I should avoid?
Okay, all very good questions. So you have, so you're not having any back pain or leg pain right now?
No.
Okay, any numbness or tingling in the feet or legs?
No.
Okay, so then at this stage, the surgery is strictly elective. It'd be different if you were having numbness, tingling, or had troubles going to the bathroom. But without those, there's really no need to have surgery at this point in time, even with what they found on the MRI. In terms of activities, I think it sounds like you're doing a good job of monitoring yourself. With the spondylolisthesis at L5-S1, usually people have problems when they arch their back or hyperextend their back. And so you want to avoid those kinds of activities. And my guess is that's why part of the yoga sessions were uncomfortable for you. Doesn't mean you can't do yoga, but I would work closely with the instructor, and any poses or movements that require some hyperextension, you just want to modify that activity. But really, it's driven by symptoms. You want to avoid excessive arching, hyperextending, and in terms of your physical activity, in cross training, I wouldn't recommend you only run or only walk. If you can mix some walking or running with biking, will also help vary the stresses on that low back area. So you have a bit of an anatomical defect down low, but lots of people have that and do just fine. Just continue to listen to the back the way that you have been.
Yeah.
Is there any concern about the cyst? The surgeon said it will probably break on its own. Now, is a cyst different from an abscess? Because if it was an abscess, there would be bacteria in there.
Yeah, that's correct. So an abscess, then you're talking about an infection. The synovial cyst, which is, I'm assuming, is off your facet joint, can be associated with an injury. But where you might need to have that taken care of, again, you would be having nerve pain, burning, shooting pain down to your leg, numbness, tingling, or weakness if it was causing issues. So as long as, again, there's no numbness, tingling, weakness, no bathroom, problems going to the bathroom, there is a good chance that cyst will resolve over time.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Sandy.
Sandy brought up a couple good points. She said, I'm not having pain now, so is it okay if I just limit my heavy lifting and watch my activities? Well, you have to ask yourself what her restrictions would be after surgery. Chances are she'd have those same restrictions after surgery.
Right.
So she's not really giving anything up to avoid surgery per se, so it's not like she's going to gain those things back if she goes to have surgery.
Right.
Very good points. Rick and Monona, hello to you.
Hi, great program. I'm enjoying it, and I had a question that I wanted to ask your guests. I started spinning. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a group activity at the Y where everybody gets on a stationary bike. And it's pretty rigorous exercise for 45 minutes or an hour. And something I noticed, I started it about a month and a half ago, and all of a sudden I started to have like burning in the lumbar area of my lower back. It doesn't involve my spine. It seems like it's the muscle groups on the right-hand side. And I've had back issues before in terms of strained backs and that, and it doesn't resemble that. The only thing I can say is that the muscles actually seem to burn.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if you could help me sort that out.
Okay. So, Rick, when you stop the activity, how quickly does this go away?
Oh, it actually happens after I'm done with the activity.
Okay.
It's like I go... I go to a guitar lesson after one of them, probably an hour, hour and a half after. And while I'm sitting in the chair, all of a sudden I notice that side of my back is burning.
Okay. And then how long does it last once the burning starts?
I can't tell you, actually. I've never timed it. Okay. It just comes and goes.
Okay. All right. So,
in fact, right now, as I'm sitting here talking to you, it's burning a little bit.
Okay. All right. Does the burning extend down into your legs at all?
No. It's really concentrated just in that area.
Okay. All right. Well, it seems like it is related to the spinning, or most probable. Kind of go back to a previous caller, maybe work with the instructor about the bike fitting you. So
uh-huh.
Looking at the height of the seat, the height of the handlebars, the angle of the handlebars, and maybe some adjustments of the bike will help minimize this or potentially eliminate it.
Yeah, and the other issue that we've seen sometimes with people biking is, even though you may have a strong core, if you don't engage your core and hold your pelvis stable, what tends to happen is your pelvis rocks a lot, or it rotates a lot. And if you have a segment up in your spine that's a little bit weaker than the others, you know, it's a bunch of joints, one stacked upon the other. If you have a weak segment or a hypermobile segment, all those loads are being transferred to that segment, and it can really flare up a pre-existing problem in your back. So one of the things in terms of your technique is, as Bill said, A, make sure you're fit right so that you can engage your muscles appropriately and stabilize your pelvis so that most of the motion is coming from your hips and legs, and you're not rocking, tipping, or rotating your pelvis as you spin, especially with those high cadence spins.
Got it. And one thing I did notice in that is that I have a long torso, and part of the class is they do this running where you actually stand up and you run for 30 seconds or a minute or something like that. And that's what I suspect it might be, because I can't reach the handlebars because I'm long torsoed.
Okay.
And well, I have trouble.
So an easy thing might be just to eliminate that portion and see, again, how far that gets you. That way you could stay in the class and see if that is the culprit. And then if it's so, then you could figure out perhaps a way to adjust for that.
Yeah, good point. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Rick. Appreciate your call. We had a Facebook question from Tad, who says, Laurie and Bill, I've been reading about compression tights and compression tops to aid in recovery after workouts like cycling or running or cross-country skiing. Do these actually work?
Well, it always depends upon how you define work and work for you. So work to decrease post-exercise soreness, you know, probably not a lot more than walking, doing an appropriate cool down and appropriate stretching when you're done. You know, for some people, it makes them feel good, and that's okay. For some people, that compression on your skin helps improve your proprioception, and so they have better position sense while they're exercising. When they're done, you know, potentially it could help with your facilitate vascular return to your heart, particularly if you have, a less efficient blood flow. The flip side of that is the compression can be harmful to some people. It can cause pooling in the extremities. It can prevent sufficient venous return if it's too tight. So it's not a yes or no question, I guess, is the bottom line. So you can try it out and see if you feel like it helps you, either, you know, in reality or via placebo, and decide for yourself. But do be careful that it doesn't increase any pooling in the extremities, that you've trapped some swelling down there.
Email from Deb in Portage. I'm 49, moderately active. I walk about 10 miles per week, do 20 minutes of yoga 3 to 4 times a week, go to 2 to 3 classes of Zumba weekly, stretch before and after each activity. Unfortunately, I have a job that requires a lot of time in front of the computer, so as soon as I stop moving, I stiffen up. Any suggestions of things I can do to avoid this stiffness?
I guess the question I have is it low back stiffness, or is it more generic stiffness? If it's the computer and sitting, then, you know, a good back support or a good chair. We've talked about if you ride a bike, you want a bike that fits you, or running shoes that fit you. And people who sit a lot, you want a chair that fits you well and provides you good support. If it's not just the low back, but more general stiffness, then, you know, that's unusual for a tendonitis or a tendinopathy. And
yes, I mean, sometimes when you have people who are active, who are moving, and then they stop, I mean, it sounds like she's cooling down sufficiently. It sounds like she's got big fluctuations in her activity level from being pretty active to being really sedentary. She may want to think about another alternative chair that allows some movement. So there are ball chairs that allow some movement and rocking of your pelvis and some calf and leg movement that may help keep her moving a little bit, even through a small range of motion that may help with some of that stiffness.
Yeah, good points. Jeremy and Monroe, your turn. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Larry. Great show. I've got plantar fasciitis in my left foot, and I went to a doctor, and he said that I basically had three options, a cortisone shot, a arch support system, you know, that was $500, or surgery. And he never did say that it was torn, so I'm wondering if physical therapy could help me alleviate this.
Yeah, we could probably add a couple more options to that list. The physical therapy typically has quite a bit to offer for people with plantar fasciitis. The first thing we would want to do is examine you and figure out why you developed plantar fasciitis. Sometimes people know where they say, you know, I did this all weekend and then I got my plantar fasciitis, or I went to Disney World and walked around in flip-flops for a week and I got plantar fasciitis. But in the absence of any identifiable cause, we want to figure out why. Is it a leg length difference? Is it a strength imbalance? Is it a flexibility imbalance? Is it how you move while you're at work or play, etc.? Because we don't want it to come back. And then the second thing is there's some very good stretching activities that work well, some massage activities, and most notably night splints, which can be obtained through the internet. And they work quite well. They take a couple months of time, but over time it will improve your symptoms and get you back doing what you want to do.
Do you? I've seen the sock where you it stretches
right.
Up.
Right. The Strasburg sock. Yeah.
You know, is that a good option? Because I tried a splint at night, and in the morning I woke up and the splint had aggravated my foot so bad that I couldn't even wear it again. I was too scared to try it.
Yeah.
I almost called in sick from work because
It hurts so bad. Well, typically people, if it hurts them that bad, they usually wake up during the night. Was it a splint that went on the back of your ankle?
No, it went on the top of my foot.
On the top? Okay.
And then there was like a wrap around it, and I haven't used it since. I tried it with a sock even.
Okay.
And it just hurt too much. So I thought maybe that sock, okay. The Strasburg sock would work.
The Strasburg sock, you could try that. There's also posterior splints that you could try. But trying to find one that works for you would be useful. You know, at this point, I certainly wouldn't go with surgery. You know, an arch support may help you while you're at work and on your feet, particularly if you're at a job that where you're on your feet all day. But I think getting in to see a physical therapist who could do a good exam and help you problem solve some of these questions, they may have different splints that you could try or ideas of different things that you could try to help you be successful with the night splint so you didn't have to figure this all out on your own.
And it doesn't seem to be sore. Like a lot of people say, it just is really sore in the morning. It doesn't seem to be as sore in the morning as like after I've been at work all day.
Okay. Well, again, then a physical therapist could look at your shoe wear and your foot posture and say, well, given that piece of information, I might recommend this. And typically before you would go to a custom $500 splint, you would use an over-the-counter because a large number of people do just as well with an over-the-counter arch support system or a lower price one. Like I know REI and some of the outdoor fitter stores sell a little bit higher quality than the Dr. Scholl's. And many people do very well with those. And so I would try that before I ever went to a custom.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Jeremy. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Dave in Lake Mills. Hello.
Yeah, hi there, guys. I'm 80 years old, and wife helped me working around the yard, gardening a lot, climbing hills and loading dirt and manure and stuff and raking and things like that. Is that sufficient exercise, or should I exercise every day, too?
How much time are you spending out there?
Oh, a couple hours a day, probably.
Yeah, well, that is good activity and good exercise. You know, it's probably not giving you the aerobic exercise that you need in terms of kind of the longer term endurance work that's good for your heart, lungs, and your muscles.
It's making my heart work climbing the hills and stuff too.
Well, I'm sure it is. Yeah, I'm sure it is. And when you're lifting and pushing wheelbarrows, I'm not saying your heart rate's not getting up there, but you know that is good activity. But generally, an exercise program is a good balance between some flexibility, some endurance aerobic work, and then some strengthening. And so I don't know how much flexibility work you're doing, stretching, whether it's of your back or your calves. And
Sometimes we're walking the dog for 2 miles a day or something, too.
Okay, well, that's good as
funny.
Well.
Yeah.
That's good as well. Well,
that's not strengthening your stomach muscles or the air muscles, probably.
No.
You know, it sounds like you're getting lots of activity, Dave. And as long as your knees and hips and back and heart are doing all right, I guess I'm not sure how much I would change. But again, we're always looking for a variety of activities and trying to avoid one thing for too many days in a row, too many hours in a row. That's when people start getting into a little bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll go right back to our emails. I was going to say phones, but then I changed my mind to go to emails, because we have some emails here, too. So Julie emailed us, for example, and says, I have a tear in my rotator cuff, and when the surgeon went in, he found it was too big to repair, but he did a bicep release. A couple of weeks ago after surgery, I pushed it, turn off a knob and pulled something in my bicep, and it was very painful and swollen. Talked to surgeon, and he said it will go away. It is still sore, still bruised, swollen, and hard. What can I do now? It hurts to lift and stretch out. Sounds painful to me.
It does to me, too. I'm wondering why he did a biceps release. So we don't have all...
What is that?
Well, that's where they would go. The biceps tendon runs right up kind of in the same area as your rotator cuff tendon. And to release it would be essentially to cut it, I would think. Or maybe it was scarred down in some way and he loosened it up. But I'm guessing from what she's written that whatever he did or the consequence of that was when she turned off the knob, she ruptured her biceps, because that's kind of what we read into that. It was painful and swollen, sore, bruised, and hard. What happens is when you rupture your biceps, the long head of your biceps tendon, it rolls up like a window shade.
Oh.
And kind of in the middle of your upper arm where you go the Popeye thing and you see the bicep, you see this little round, hard, like tennis ball or golf ball, and you say, wow, look at this great bicep I have. And actually what it is your bicep has rolled up like a window shade. So I'm guessing that... not sure what he found when he got in there, but she's ruptured her bicep. So you I think you need to be seen in physical therapy and get a program for that shoulder because you now have a complete tear of your rotator cuff. You now have no long head of the biceps, which, by the way, many people get along with just fine, because your primary elbow flexor is strangely not the long head of your biceps. There are other forearm and arm muscles that actually work to flex your elbow. So you can get by without your biceps. But given that she's lost both her biceps and her rotator cuff, she needs some good strengthening for some of the other supportive muscles in her shoulder girdle. So she should get into PT and address that.
Yeah, it's hard to tell from the email unless I'm misreading it. I don't know if she went to see the surgeon or just call the surgeon.
Yeah, it sounded like a call was the sense I got from it.
So if she only called, based on what she's describing, I would say go make an appointment and go in and be seen.
Yeah, she said she talked to the surgeon. Yeah. That could mean phone.
Right.
Probably meant phone.
So if it was phone only, I'd go in and see the surgeon. PT's going to have a role to try to help her regain her mobility and her strength. But to be seen would be good.
All right. James in Park Falls, hello.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mid-January, I was out for a run, and I slipped on the ice, and I tore my left quad muscle. And I've been seeing PT, you know, ever since it happened, and they've been doing the Grafton technique to help the muscle along. They basically said that I could get back to training, but my question is it possible to get back to a competitive level of racing with coming off of an injury like this?
Well, I guess my quick response is you won't know till you try.
Oh, yeah.
So you should get back out there. I mean, I'm hoping that they took you through a strengthening program as well for your quad. Yeah. And then, you know, you start back running like you're starting at the beginning. You know, walk, jog, short distances, progress into some speed work and things like that. And just you have to take it based upon the quad's response to the activity. Nobody really knows what your final capacity is going to be until you get out and you appropriately train to try to get back.
Okay.
So I would say that the people who are working with you have a better idea of the prognosis because they've been working with you all this time. I'd ask them that question. But, you know, physiologically, I'd say you certainly could. In your specific situation, it's hard to say.
Okay. Well, It's kind of what I needed to know.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
You betcha.
Glenn in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Good morning. Got a question about running and running shoes. I've been running for years. I've got what they call plantar fibroma. And the feet they're not totally flat, but they're on the flatter side with the arch. And I'm just wondering, is there a shoe for the what you would call probably the people that run with shoes, a good shoe, and also is the new type of running barefoot, would that work for me with the fibroma? I don't have any pain per se from the fibroma.
Where is the fibroma?
Some of it is in the tendon right on the bottom. But most of it is on the inside of the foot.
And is it within the plantar fascia? Is it within the okay? So you have little nodules or something in the plantar fascia itself.
Yes.
Okay. And have you had any problem running in the shoes that you're in now?
Not particularly. Except they don't fit very well. Okay. That's the thing I don't like about these shoes. I'm probably one that shouldn't be doing this, but I kind of run the shoes and then put shoe goop on them and until they're really bad.
That's not good.
It's like an old pair of jeans. They're hard to get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have any problems with my knees. I don't have any problems, you know.
Yeah, yep, yep. So
I've been lucky that way.
Yeah, and may I ask your age?
I'm 66.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the only reason I ask that is, you know, when you make the transition from running in shoes to running without shoes, you know, your connective tissues have to adapt. And at 66, it's harder for them to adapt than it is at 26. So, you know, I'd say you could try one of the, you know, not going barefoot running, but one of the more in-betweener types of shoes, like the Nike Freeze or something like that. Probably the biggest thing is if you're concerned about your mechanics is to shorten up your stride and increase your stride turnover. That's probably going to be the best thing overall for you. And if you're going to be a shod runner, then to replace your shoes and not do the shoe goo. I don't know if the plantar fibroma will at any point rear its ugly head and become symptomatic. You just don't know. But I'd err on the side of caution if I had kind of a pre-existing pathology that could flare up and slow down what you love to do.
Okay. Another question, when you said about the stride, you were talking about people with a back with the L5 or
L5S1. Yep.
Yeah. And I've got that also. So as a result, if I have a short stride, that tends to kind of flare that up a little bit. The longer strides seems to, not bother, the back at all.
Hmm. Does that make sense to you mechanically, Bill?
Well, usually people have more trouble with longer strides,
right?
Because there's more twisting in the low lumbar area. There's more motion through that lumbar area, and it puts a little more of a stretch on the sciatic nerve when you really stretch out. I guess I'm not sure if I would change anything from what you're doing based on what you're describing. To protect the fibroma, I think Lori's suggestions with the shoes and getting new shoes sooner as opposed to later is probably the best thing. And if that takes care of your concern about the foot, then I wouldn't change your stride in terms of what seems to be best for your back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Lynn in Madison, what can we do for you?
Hello. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have upper back pain on the right side along the perimeter of the scapula, and it extends sometimes into the ribs. The pain first presents as itching or burning and then progresses to more generalized dull pain and sometimes sharp localized pain and occasionally twinges in the shoulder. I've tried to analyze what activities bring this pain on, but it's very intermittent. But getting up in the morning, I have no pain at night, cooking, shopping, sometimes a computer at the desk, activities that involve some forward movement of my arm. And I've had this for about 10 years. I've had physical therapy, acupuncture, et cetera. And it did first present after I broke my lower leg, a tib-fib fracture. And I'm wondering if this is somehow related or it's been a very sticky problem, to say the least.
Yeah, it sounds that way, and that's a long time on top of that. So your right scapula, right shoulder blade, is it on the side of your shoulder blade that's closest to the spine, or is it the outer part of the shoulder blade closest to your arm?
Closest to the spine, but it does at times extend almost onto under my arm in the rib area.
Okay. All right. Was there an injury way back when to shoulder, back, or neck?
No. Ironically, years before, I had a dislocated left shoulder from a skiing accident,
okay.
But I'm not sure if that's related. I have had MRIs. They show some stenosis, but not major problems with my spine at all.
Okay. All right. Well, the area you're describing, and there's a couple things to consider. Certainly there are muscles and joints in that immediate area. Your shoulder connects fairly close by.
Mm-hmm.
The area you described is very common referral symptoms from the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming or hoping that when you've worked with a physical therapist in the past that they examined and worked with your neck and upper back and arm and walk through some postural suggestions or ideas for you?
Yes. And many different types of exercise, et cetera. I get relief right away from a session, and also I have a sports medicine masseuse, but nothing is really lasting. I do exercise quite a bit and don't feel it so much when I lift weights or am on the elliptical trainer, et cetera.
Okay, and it sounds like you've done some core strengthening as well?
That's correct.
Okay, all right. Well, I think it sounds like you had appropriate things that have been tried with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as there's been, in terms of what, in your mind, an appropriate, adequate focus on your neck
mm-hmm.
as the potential source of symptoms. I don't know if anybody has tried potentially traction, even a home unit for your neck, has done some stretching, strengthening up in the cervical area.
Mm-hmm. I will try that. I did try at-home traction, but did not give that much attention. So perhaps something that I can try and ask to sort of my therapist to focus a little more in the neck area.
Yeah. And so just make sure that, so before you kind of give up on that, again, what you're describing to me sounds neck, very much neck related.
Mm-hmm.
Could that be associated with the tib-fib fracture years ago? It's possible in terms
mm-hmm.
of throwing off your posture and how you stand and walk.
Mm-hmm.
But
or even the injury that caused the tib-fib fracture. fracture. Right. Sometimes you're so focused on something like a big fracture that you don't really realize what else was injured in the accident.
Right,
right. Well, at least I've had great success with the tib-fib fracture.
Yes.
I'm walking and jogging.
You know, and Lynn, the other thing besides, again, talking to therapists about the neck and just making sure that's been cleared enough, also doing what's called neural mobility, like nerves, neural mobility assessment.
All right.
And comparing that right arm to left arm. There may be something that comes up in that part of the exam that, you know, could be incorporated into your home program. Mm-hmm.
I will try that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And one question we get often is, when is heat a better option for over ice for an injury in like 30 seconds?
Okay, well, in an acute injury, ice is always better.
Okay.
So, and the old mantra is, when in doubt, use ice. Sometimes heat feels better in an arthritic kind of condition when you have stiffness and it's not acute. So you have sort of a chronic pain and stiffness. Then heat often feels better, but
yeah,
you can always use ice and be okay.
Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests, they will be with us right up until 12:30 today to talk about staying injury-free and how to deal with those aches, pains, sprains, and strains. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests today, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapists at UW. Great to have them along. They come by every month to talk with us. And we're having some fun as we visit with them, although it's kind of painful fun at For example, we've got an email from Paul in Green Bay, whose son is 11 and good athlete. All of a sudden, been experiencing heel pain only during athletics. He's grown a bit lately, and I've been trying to get him to stretch more religiously, calves and the upper leg. Also, I've been having him do arch rolls with a golf ball or tennis ball. We had x-rays and they were negative. I had similar symptoms when I was his age. Any other thoughts on what might be going on?
Well, the question is where in the heel. It's not uncommon to get pain in the back of the heel at this age, and you can get a condition called Sievers disease. People may have heard of Osgood-Schlatter's disease when, you know, kids grow fast and they get that bump on the front of their knee as their quadriceps try to keep up with the longitudinal growth of their bone. You can get the same thing on the back of the heel where the Achilles tendon attaches. So if it's on the back of the heel, then yes, the Achilles stretching would be really important. You can make donut pads to take the pressure off that point on the back of the heel that hurts. So you get a pad and you cut it out a hole where the tender point is on the bone. If it's pain around and underneath the heel, then you might try a heel cup. And you can get those at any drugstore or sporting goods stores. And those provide some additional cushion underneath the heel. But they're on the right track with the stretching exercises and trying to get him to do that. And then just figuring out what the source of the heel pain is, whether it's behind or underneath all the way around. And again, if he's having arch pain, then you might want to do the fill the soda bottle with water, put it in the freezer, and do an ice massage.
Oh, yeah. That feels good. Facebook question from Kay. I'm going back to work tomorrow as a nurse's aide. And at a nursing home after having a total knee replacement in December. Anything I should watch out for during my first few days of work?
Well, be careful. I mean, this is across the board. Careful about avoiding slipping. So if there's any water on the floor, things on the floor, towels, clothing, not to trip over unexpectedly. And she's got to be probably a little extra careful protecting her low back. Usually we want people to be lifting with their legs, which requires good knee flexion. And so I'm assuming she doesn't probably have the full knee flexion range of motion. So being extra careful how she lifts and transfer people and get a helping hand when she can.
Sylvester in Stoughton, hello to you.
Hello. I have a lack of cartilage underneath my kneecaps and a surgeon. I've been through the physical therapy and I had the MRI and the surgeon recommend a juvenile cartilage transplant, and I was wondering if you guys heard of it, and if you think it's fairly pretty safe, and it looks kind of barbaric, the surgery, and I was wondering what you would recommend.
Can you describe, I'm not sure what the juvenile cartilage transplant is. Can you be more specific?
It's made by Zimmer, and it says it's juvenile hyaline cartilage pieces, and they're placed underneath your kneecap, and they have to, I guess you dig away the part where the bone's exposed, and it looks like you fill it in there.
Yep, okay. There's a number of cartilage replacement surgeries that they're talking about. So, the area under your kneecap is a tough area because of the high loads that it sees. My presumption is that you've tried physical therapy and other alternatives, and you're just having a lot of pain.
Not so much pain. It's pain, and it's the inflammation goes behind my kneecap also. So it kind of both of it's all of that.
Okay, but the inflammation doesn't cause any pain.
Oh yeah, it causes pain too. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, there's not a long track record with this type of surgery. It's the cartilage replacement surgeries are evolving pretty rapidly. They've evolved pretty rapidly for the last 20 years. So each new generation is a little bit different than the previous one. And so the bottom line is we don't have 20-year results to be able to say, in 20 years, this is what you can expect to happen, because we don't have that kind of data. It makes sense theoretically. There are other types of surgeries that are similar to that have been done in the past that have a pretty good prognosis. You're going to have to be pretty careful after your surgery. Have they talked to you about the rehab afterwards and the limitations afterwards?
No, not yet. No.
Okay, that'd be an important conversation to have with your surgeon, because this type of cartilage requires a fair amount of time to remodel. And if I were the surgeon, I'd be pretty particular about what kind of load you put on your kneecaps. So, before you decide anything, I'd have a pretty clear idea of what the expectations are post-operatively and in terms of the final result and relative to the things that you want to do. Is this surgery going to allow you to be able to do the things that you want to do? Is it going to accomplish the goals that you have for your knees?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay?
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bob in Claybanks, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for the show, and Bill and Lori, thanks for making time. Mm-hmm. I've got some knee pain. I was doing a fair amount of squatting for about 3 weeks, about 2.5 weeks ago, and all of a sudden, my left knee in particular started giving me some pretty severe pain. I had a little trouble walking for a couple hours when it first showed up, and it's kind of come and gone since then. It hasn't been as bad as it was then. I tried leg lifts to try and see what that might do, and that didn't seem to help at all. The only relief I get is when I sit flat on the floor with my legs flat. Otherwise, I have to kind of move my leg around, and even at night, I've got a little discomfort. Nothing that wakes me up. But I was wondering if you might have any thoughts as to what that might be.
Go ahead.
It's right below the bottom of the kneecap, and it seems like the left is the really the. I've got a little pain in the right, but it's mostly the left knee.
Okay, so you were your comfortable position is hyperextended, and the pain you had was after prolonged squatting.
Yes,
is that right? Okay,
yes.
And if you poke around on the front of your knee below your kneecap, can you find a spot that hurts?
A little bit. I get a little. A dull sensation, but nothing that equivalent to the pain that kind of comes and goes.
Okay, and what makes the pain come and what makes it go?
Nothing really. I mean, actually, if I walk downstairs, it's that seems to aggravate it. But sometimes I'll just be sitting and.
Okay. The walking down the stairs is an important clue. because that's related to kneecap pain. And given that you are in a prolonged squatting position, it puts a tremendous amount of stress on the undersurface of your kneecap. So like Sylvester, who's thinking about having resurfacing of the undersurface of his kneecap, squatting is pretty limited. Going downstairs really stresses the undersurface of your kneecap. So my guess is that you stirred up probably some arthritis on the undersurface of your kneecap. So the leg lifts aren't going to fix it, but over time they will help. So, you know, icing, some stretching of your quadriceps, stretching of your hamstrings, and you may find that gradually your symptoms resolve. If, you know, in another couple weeks you're doing that and you're still just having a lot of pain going downstairs and you're finding that you're changing what you do, changing how you do things, then it's time to be seen and get a more definitive diagnosis and treatment plan. But your mechanism and your symptoms are pretty consistent with undersurface of your kneecap.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Carol called from Cambridge, said that taping religiously really helps her plantar fasciitis. Also, there's a DVD available in Dane County Library System and maybe others as well for treating plantar fasciitis. That's great. She said she and you, Lori, have talked about it.
Oh, yes, yes. I self-treated my plantar fasciitis with duct tape, and it works really well for me. When my plantar fasciitis gets bad, I can't wear my arch supports. And I had a friend who is a physical therapist in Missouri who specializes in ankle and foot, and he taught me a quick and dirty taping technique using duct tape. And that's what I do, and I sometimes show it to my friends. I don't broadcast it too widely because I'm not sure how acceptable it is in the medical community, but there are taping techniques in athletic medicine using standard athletic tape that are the same pattern that I use for taping, the same type of taping, but the duct tape is so easy because people can do it in one piece, yeah. and you're done. So I don't know what the medico-legal implications are of recommending duct tape.
Probably zero.
Exactly.
Rash,
so,
but it's interesting that you can't wear your orthotics when it flares up. We had an earlier caller about who said he had plantar fasciitis and what a pretty elaborate arch support system help is. Oftentimes, correcting foot and ankle mechanics can help in the long run keep it from coming back again.
Yeah.
In more acute phases, they don't tolerate an arch support.
Exactly.
And so you need something to get them over that first hump before the arch support may become useful.
Right. And then, you know, if you're going in to see a physical therapist, they can show you ways to tape your foot, and that can give you information about whether or not you would be helped with an orthotic. Or it can help you get over the acute phase of your plantar fasciitis as well.
Randy in Green Bay. Hi there.
Hello. Hi, thanks for the show. I had just a quick question. My wife tore her Achilles, ACL tendon, had it replaced with Achilles cadaver tendon, and tore her meniscus, flipped up under the kneecap, had to have 80% of that removed. My question is, she would like to run a 10K run this spring. The doctor and therapist said it's okay, but the doctor also said he's looking at arthritis probably in 10 years or so. So my question is she hastening the onslaught of that arthritis condition? So the question is not so much can she run, but should she?
Yeah.
If you had an opinion on that.
Randy, how old is your wife?
In her mid-40s.
Okay. If you tear your meniscus after age 35... then the rate of progression of arthritis is accelerated compared to people who tear their meniscus before age 35. So, you know, she lost 80% of her meniscus, which, you know, makes me shudder. And she's in an age group where she'll see a fairly rapid onset of arthritis due to the meniscus loss, and then she tore ACL on top of it. You know, I just put her in a high risk category. So, can she run? Yeah. Is she at high risk of accelerating arthritis? Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I guess I'd leave it at that and say she can decide.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, thank you.
You betcha, Randy.
Thanks for calling. Tough decisions ahead there.
Well, it is. You know, when you love to run, and sometimes people say, okay, I'll take my chances. You know, my parents gave me really good joint surfaces. I don't have another lick of arthritis anywhere in my body. My parents are 80 and they have no arthritis. Then, you know.
Yeah. Lifestyle changes are tough to make, tough to face.
Peter in Green Bay, it is your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Several times a year, over the course of a week or two, my lower back will get very, very tight at night. And then during the day, if I'm sitting or standing, I have this sensation in my right big toe, like there's a rubber band around the base of it, and a slight burning on my left ankle. Now, all of those simple symptoms go away if I lie down. And my back will loosen up during the day. I'm wondering if there's any explanation that you can think of for this.
Was there an injury to your low back, even going back as a high school, a child?
No.
Okay.
Last year I went in, I had an MRI. They found no structural problems. They found nothing.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that's good. And the so again, the tightness is on the big toe of which leg?
Right. It's not it's a tightness in my back, but then it feels like when I stand on it, it feels kind of numb, or it feels like it's not painful, but it kind of feels like there's maybe like a rubber band around the toe that just you feel like you have to get something off of it.
Okay. And then the burning that you described is in the same leg?
No, it's in the other one.
On the other. Okay. All right. Well, the MRI was the correct test to do at that time with those kinds of symptoms. You know, you have to consider, is there a bulging disc that's putting pressure on nerves, you know, coming out into the legs? But they cleared you of that. Another place where nerves can get irritated a bit is down in what's called a sciatic notch, the buttock area. I mean, you mentioned that you tend to get better as the day goes on. You loosen up as the day goes on, the back.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Does the big toe tightness or the burning, does that get better or worse as the day goes on?
Worse.
Okay. All right. Have you seen a physical therapist?
No.
Okay. Well, the MRI being negative is a really good thing. Because what I would do is I recommend seeing a physical therapist, and they can screen your low back. They can also screen your hips and this sciatic notch area. And because burning, we tend to make us think about nerves. And then they'll also go down all the way down to your feet and toes and examine you to see if they can figure out, so what is the source of this? Where is especially the burning in the big toe, that tight band, where is that coming from? They can do a good neurological screen for you and see if they can come up with a plan for you. You know, if you had not had an MRI, that's what I would recommend. Go see a physician and talk about potential imaging. But since you've had that and that was negative, I'd recommend seeing a physical therapist and having examine you.
Okay. Do you see any relationship between the back and the problems with the feet?
Yeah, possible. I mean, what you mentioned is, you know, burning, we think nerve, and that could be coming from the back or it can be coming from your leg. The big toe is usually tied to the L5 nerve, typically for people. So it's possible that's connected. But the MRI being negative, that's why, again, I recommend being seen where they can check you from your feet on up to the back and see if some other pattern falls out.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. And Matt in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. I work out regularly, and last Friday, I was on that machine where you can raise the steps and, you know, move your arms back and forth. And during that workout, I got a pain in the upper calf, below the knee on the back side of the leg. And as I got off and let it rest and stuff, the pain got worse and worse and worse, and I couldn't even walk on it. So I did the RICE program, put some ice on it and stuff. And it seems to be okay, but it's still very painful. The question I have, I guess, for you is, when can I start resuming a full exercise program, and what can I do in terms of exercise to that strengthen that area back there?
Well, I mean, the first question is, what did you do? Did you just strain one of your calf muscles? Can you go up and down on your toes?
Yes.
Okay, does that hurt?
No, but it's tight.
Okay. Have you tried stretching it? Does that feel better?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, going forward, presuming that it's a musculoskeletal problem localized to your calf muscles and that your calf is continuing to get better with stretching and strengthening, the strengthening we would typically do for muscles in the back of your calf is starting on a flat surface, raising up on both of your toes, and then lowering down with just the involved side, so two up, one down. So we do some of that from a level surface. If that gets easy, then you do it over the edge of a step, so you're working through a greater range of motion. And then in terms of getting back to your activities, you know, you should stay off of the elliptical or whatever specific stepping machine it was and stick with things like biking or things in the pool where you don't have that all that weight on your foot doing that pressing down motion. And your body will kind of tell you when you're ready to go back. Was this the first time you had done that machine?
No, I've done it. I've done it for 6 weeks, maybe
okay.
7 weeks. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I use
okay.
that machine. And over the last 6 weeks, obviously, I've increased the height of the steps
okay.
of the pads.
Okay. So maybe what you did was you hit a critical point on Friday where it was too high. So you're just going to want to back it back down. You maybe hit your capacity there.
Mm-hmm. Makes good sense. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Kathleen in St. Croix Falls. Hello.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
I have arthritis, apparently, in my right hip. It had been giving me trouble for years and had a quick x-ray a couple weeks ago. Apparently it's bone on bone. I'm completely not ready to do a surgery, so I'm wondering how to handle it in the meanwhile.
Okay.
So are you exercising at all currently?
I'm quite active. I bike, I swim, I do elliptical, I ski, I walk a lot, and do some, some heavy work, some maple syrup seasons on, so carrying sap and that kind of thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the activity is really good. The, for things on your feet, having good footwear, good shock absorption through the shoes can help minimize how much load actually gets up to the hip. You want to squeeze as much flexibility out of that hip and maintain it for as long as possible. So strengthening your core, strengthening around the hip, and good hip flexibility is a good combination with all the other things you just mentioned. So have you seen a physical therapist in the past?
I haven't for many years, actually. Before I had the x-ray, I saw one, but that's some years ago.
Okay. All right. You know, one visit, maybe two visits to really establish a home program for you. And again, looking at your core and then locally around that hip for flexibility and strength. And then they could also take a quick look at your ankles and feet and see if an orthotic may help minimize the load coming up to your hip. And that may help you. I mean, what you're talking about, the surgery is elective at this point. It's your quality of life and how much pain you're having. And I think you can delay this for a while, it sounds like.
Yeah, and the physical therapist can also talk to you about how to perform some of your activities that you're doing at home and work to minimize the loads on your hips. There are certain ways you can carry things that decrease the loads on your hip joints.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And here we are, about out of time. Thank you guys
Indeed.
For coming.
It
you're
does
back.
Fly.
You are back on April 16th, because that must be the third Monday of April.
And the day after tax day. People...
They'll be hurting. There'll be a lot of pain.
There could be pain, yes.
We finished our taxes yesterday.
Oh, you are so good.
And tomorrow, as a matter of fact, if those of you who have not finished your taxes...
That would be me.
CPA Scott Franklin, tax expert, joins us to talk about taxes and tax day, and he's of course happy to answer everybody's questions. Thank you guys. Bill Boysen on Larry Tyne Brody, they'll be back, and thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.